Take your time. Don't live too fast. Troubles will come and they will pass. And I'm a simple kind of man. That's about as far as I know.
What song is that?
Simple Man by Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Oh, okay, yeah. All right. Now putting two together. Okay, cool.
I was thinking of like getting a tattoo of that. That's the only reason I know those lyrics.
That's perfect, man. Keegan, that basically gets the show started. Yeah, thanks very much, man.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Where are you coming from?
Toronto. Actually, I was just coming from the Eaton Center.
I haven't been there in forever.
Yeah, we're doing a big project there in Nordstrom. We changed it into a bunch of different stores. So doing all five levels right now. And
I thought they used to put all the self-leveler in. Now they're just grinding them down.
We're taking all the self-leveling out and redoing it all. I mean, most of it was gypsum-based back then. I want to say 15 years ago, where most of my company did most of it 15, 20 years ago. And now we're back in there redoing it.
So we got a good show. We're going to chat about basically surface preparation, repair, polishing, anything to do with surface.
Anything to do with concrete except actually forming and pouring, which we're slowly getting into.
Why? You guys are so good at the other.
It's an empire build, more or less. We want to be a top to bottom outfit. And the developers and builders are kind of going that way, more or less, where it's less necks to choke and or one neck to choke, let's put it that way. but, you know, we want to be multiple services, not just one sector. And I think that diversity gives us a little bit more of an edge in the market than just being one-sided.
Let me share the information. Keegan's here. What's your last name again, sir?
Burke.
B-U-R-K. Keegan Burke is here. So you can reach him at keegan@gfiinc.ca. You can reach them at 905-878-3349. Online, you'll find them at www.gfiinc.ca. And then on IG, you'll find them under Ground Floor Industries. That's it.
That's it.
I got to do a shout out to Santos, and he gave me the t-shirt for Highview Construction. It's an extra large, but it doesn't feel like an extra large. And that's why I'm wearing my hoodie over it, because it's a little snug. It's probably constricting. I'm probably going to pass out at some point during the show. No, it's fine. I don't know.
It's time of year, you know.
I don't know. It hasn't been washed. It's just been thrown on. Okay, so like I said, we're going to get started on how old is the business right now, GFI? How long have you guys been around?
This has been an industry for about 22 years. Okay. I purchased the business 6 years ago. Me and my father bought it. And I worked for the company for about a year and a half before we purchased the company. So all in all, I've been part of it for about 7 years, and the company's been around 22.
And then before that, what were you doing?
I was doing a hot applied waterproofing out in Calgary.
Interesting.
So started doing a little residential here in Toronto with the waterproofing, then got a site super job out in Calgary. So did roofing out there, foundation waterproofing. Then the oil dropped and came back.
No, the oil didn't drop. The oil was taken away.
It was taken away. Yes. Yes.
Just so to clarify.
Calgary kind of changed overnight when I was there.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. And which is typical for kind of Calgary. It kind of does the roller coaster every few years. So I had to run back to Toronto and got a job with a small concrete company called Capcrete. And I was their contracts manager for about a year and a half. And then went to their competition, which was Ground Floor Industries, and grew that business and saw the opportunity to buy it. So we executed that deal probably about 6 years ago.
And it's doing well now.
Doing really well.
Mostly commercial?
Mostly high-rise, actually.
Mostly high-rise.
So that we kind of changed the business model, where a lot of the leveling companies were kind of two guys in a truck when I first purchased. So not really office professionalism, logos and trucks, and it wasn't really a real trade.
They got the job done.
They got the job done, for sure. But there was no face value company, let's call it, at that time. So we wanted to kind of professionalize it and grow the business that way. So we saw the high-rise market booming at that time, and that would keep the guys consistent. So you have your good finishers on a consistent basis, and then you can dip into the commercial market whenever it comes through. But commercial market was kind of going ebb and flow, right? So you'd have gaps in between where you'd have to either lay off a couple guys or try to keep them busy elsewhere, where the high rise was really a really good structure to keep the labor force going.
I'm curious, Kay, what's the youngest high rise that you guys have gone in to resurface?
The youngest high rise. Well, we do new residential.
You do new residential?
New residential.
You're grinding new residential?
Yes.
Explain that to me, please.
So forming companies come in, they pour their slab. Yeah. They got to bring it to 3/8 over 10 feet flat, which is not the flooring specifications of 1/8 over 10 feet flat. So there's a bit of a gap in tolerance that you have to achieve in order to put your floor finishes in. So we come in after the forming company performs their slab. We correct that slab and within tolerance for the floor finishes. Then the floor finishings go on.
I had no idea. I just assumed that it was poured right to...
No.
I'm not...
It's actually getting worse and worse, which is good because all the younger finishers aren't... I hate to say they're doing a good job, but there's such an influx of work in Toronto that they're really just speed. It's just getting the slab down. Who cares about the tolerance and just moving up?
Give me the tolerance numbers again. So they give it to you at what?
3/8 over 10 feet. Over 10 feet flat.
And for any finished flooring material, you have to be 1/8
and 10 feet flat.
So you're carving out a quarter inch.
Correct.
But sometimes you're seeing more.
Well, depending. I mean, it could be a wave, right? So we're taking down the highs and filling in the lows. So if you have a dip, that's quarter inch or even 3/8, we fill that in. If you got a high of 3/8, we chop that down.
So every floor is done? Like every
single floor, every single square foot of that building is done, yeah.
Wow.
So we're covering roughly around 70% of the floor on a grind and patch method with self-leveling material, where the other 30% would be grinding down the highs.
It depends on how...
Depends on what the slab's like. Every single slab's different. We have some that we do 50%, some that we do 70%, but on average, 70% of that slab is covered.
What's the workforce like, TFR? Like, how many guys, how many crews?
At our peak, we're about 80, 90 guys.
Oh, wow. Eh?
And then slow down period, I'd say last October, September, October, we came down to about 60 guys.
Okay, so I mean, okay, I don't know too much about this world because it's high rise. I'm not a commercial guy. I'm not a union guy.
Yeah.
Machinery wise, you're going like what units are you guys using?
So we use Dymatic blast tracks, shop blasting equipment, grinders, edge grinders, hand grinders, chipping guns.
How dust free is it these days?
It's they're all closed off systems, all HEPA-FAC filters and vacuum systems that attach right to the units. But again, I mean, we're grinding concrete, so it's gonna create dust. I mean, we've got hoods on all of our equipment. All of our guys wear the 3M respirators, but it's a dirty job. I mean, there's no getting around it. We're grinding cement into dust. So
it's also the sound issues too.
Yes.
Because it ain't quiet machinery.
So most of our commercial projects, we got to work night shift, which is because of all the malls or things like that.
That makes it even worse, right?
Yes.
And you were just mentioning about the Eaton Center, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So how does that work during the holiday crazy?
It's nuts. Like we just did 70,000 square feet in about a week and a half. And so I've got crews running at night, crews running during the day. And we sometimes flop it from morning to afternoon shift, which is, it's been a logistical nightmare, but we got to get it done.
And so like I was saying, it was like, I was so used to self-leveling comes in and covers up the old and that's how you get a new floor. But now you're grinding
down. Now we're grinding it down because they have certain elevations that they got to stick to. You got all the elevator fronts, all the door thresholds already existing. So you can't just keep adding and adding and adding. You're losing your ceiling height at that point.
Is it easy to grind? Like, I'm assuming older concrete is harder to grind through. Or is it
not? Depends. I mean, depends on the composition of it. Okay. We've had some that are incredibly hard, which eats through all the tooling really, really quick. And then we've got some that's basically powder when we get there. So it just depends on what composition was, whether it be gypsum or cementitious based, whether they actually did the surface prep right, which is epoxy sand broadcast underneath, if they didn't prime. There's many factors that can factor into
it. If they prime their ceiling at all and all of a sudden now you can't penetrate it.
Right, right. So we walk into a bunch of different scenarios. So you got to kind of have a trained eye when you walk into a room to see whether it's going to give you grief or whether it's going to be a walk in the park.
Yeah, but it's kind of a crapshoot because you can't really see right through the layers,
you
right?
You can't. But when they start doing the demo work, which ripping up the tiles or vinyl flooring, you can see if they start digging into the floor and see if that was easy. If you don't see any scuff marks going into the floor, you know that's a pretty hard floor.
Hmm.
So kind of little indicators will tell you what you're looking at before you.
So what kind of a person grinds the floor? Like what kind of a tradesperson is doing this?
Well, we have finishers, general laborers. There's kind of really no in between with my company in that regard. We have guys that go and finish the concrete, lay the concrete, run the pumping, making sure all the mixes are right and kind of double checking to make sure everything's going copacetic on site. And then you've just got your general labor force, guys that are putting the bags into the pumps, grinding the floors, scarifying the floors. And those guys slowly work their way up into a finish because then they kind of learn how to start surveying the floor, reading the floor properly, making sure that it's they're learning from a guy that's a finisher already. So there's only two steps really in my industry that.
But you guys are doing everything. Like you guys are doing the high rise, new construction, old construction. You're doing epoxy.
We are.
You're doing. Are you getting into the parking garages or
parking garages, traffic decks, traffic toppings.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're grinding down asphalt.
Yes. Well, it depends. Underground, no.
No, but above ground.
Above ground, yes.
You get into asphalt.
No, we don't do asphalt. No. So you have the parking garage top slab, which is waterproofed, and then the underground's all traffic.
So you're doing the top as well, too. You're prepping
it for... Not yet.
Not yet.
No. That's all waterproofing.
That's all waterproofing side. You're not getting into the waterproofing side.
No. The traffic topping is the coating that goes in the underground.
Got it. Okay. Yeah,
so it's either a clear traffic topping or you see the gray, kind of looks like epoxy going through the hole.
Yeah, I know that. It's really very, very thick.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
With like rocks in it.
Which makes sense for us because we're trying to get the waterproofing package now. So we get the leveling package, the waterproofing package, which covers all the coatings and the leveling work. That's in a high rise.
Have you seen, like, I know that all new construction is slowing down, obviously the economy.
It is.
And
it is.
Yesterday, the announcement of the dollar going below 70 cents now
because
of all the, we got the Metro Toronto Zoo running this country, right?
100%.
So, it's just a shame.
It is.
So it's like, I know for a fact that, you know, a lot of the unions, tradespeople, a lot of people are staying at home. So it's affected. There's
for the first time ever. I mean, we're a unionized company. We're 183 and 506. for the first time, they closed their doors. I believe it was in either May or April. We had a meeting with them. They weren't allowing any new members. It's the first time since, I think, 2003 or 2007 or something like that. Don't quote me on the year. But it's been almost 20 years since they didn't allow new members in, which was a scary thought and a scary, scary thing to hear at that time. For the new construction, for the new high rise, there's going to be a pocket of disruption there. And because you see the sales center, I think there was 80 or 90 sales center, this year, I think 60 of them closed down, which means they didn't get the sales.
Nope. So they can't start.
So they can't start construction.
Yeah.
So now you see all the projects that are starting ground, which will last this year, into next year, probably quarter two of next year. And then you're going to see end of 2026 into 27, there's going to be next to none. Unless somebody comes in and changes it real quick and lights it up.
I mean, someone's made the suggestion of making us a 51st state.
I would have no opposition to that, but I mean, I do a lot of traveling in the States.
No, so the point is that we want to see, listen, Canada should be having a lot of construction starts.
It should be.
Right? We should have a lot of construction starts and we should have all the tradespeople working because they want to work.
There's so much red tape and so much
I know.
Bureaucracy surrounding it rather than, you know what, let's go, let's build, let's get people money, you know? And it's the tough part about Toronto. And it was such a boom for a while. I think people forgot what the hard times really kind of were.
Well, they're here.
They're here now.
They're hanging out for a bit.
Yeah, they're not moving.
So, but that's construction too. And a lot of people that have been in construction game for a while understand and they see it.
100%.
It's the young ones that I'm concerned about if they're going to jump ship and leave, go someplace else.
And you're seeing a lot of people do that. You're seeing a lot.
You can't fault them.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Right?
I mean, you got to have a pathway moving forward. If you don't see any light at the end of the tunnel, you got to find it somewhere. And it looks like the States is going to boom the way it's going.
I think it will.
Yeah. Yeah.
I definitely think it will, right? So, and what's your service area? How far north, how east, west?
We go anywhere.
You guys go anywhere, really?
Yeah. All of Ontario. So we've gone 18 hours north, 19 hours north, all the way to Windsor, depending on the job. I mean, I'm not going to send guys out for, 1,000 square feet. It's got to be a pretty sizable job for me to mobilize out there. We've worked in London. We've worked in Vancouver, a couple projects in Vancouver. But again, just depends on the size of the job and if it's worth it.
What's the average condo tower these days, like square footage wise?
You're about, well, you got the corner units that are roughly like 1,200 square feet, 1,000 square feet. And you've got in between ones that are 560 square feet to...
Then on average, you get about
750 square feet, I would say on average.
But the whole tower itself, what is it, about 300 units per tower?
Call it a 30-story tower, you're probably 400,000 square feet, depending on the plates.
Wow.
Yeah.
Not a bad contract.
It's nice, yeah.
Keeps you busy for a little bit.
Well, and that's the whole thing, right? You're usually a week of floor. That's how fast my guys do the grind and patch. So you consider if you get a 30-story tower, you're 30 weeks of of your guys tied up there, which is
that's pretty good.
You can you know, plan your year a little bit better that way if you know it's consecutive floors ahead of you.
Consider Expert Plumbing and Drains. When it comes to plumbing, you need someone who's not just skilled, but truly cares about the job they do. Someone like Aaron Bolin and his team at Expert Plumbing and Drains. Aaron has been in the trade for years, and he's built his reputation on one thing, commitment. Commitment to his craft, his crew, and most importantly, to you, the client. At Expert Plumbing and Drains, it's not just fixing pipes, it's about delivering the best possible service, every single time, on every single project. So whether you're dealing with a leaky faucet, a stubborn drain, or planning a full plumbing overhaul, Aaron and his team are ready to tackle it all with skill, integrity, and a passion for excellence. Need help now? Call Expert Plumbing and Drains at 905-531-4111. That's 905-531-4111. Or visit them at www.expertplumbinganddrains.com and on social media at Expert Plumbing and Drains Canada. Experience the difference of working with a team that's dedicated to getting the job done right. Because at Expert Plumbing and Drains, your satisfaction is their top priority. You can also email Aaron directly at aaron@expertplumbinganddrains.com. Expert Plumbing and Drains, where expertise meets care. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
I'm just assuming it's not so much that the operator doesn't know what they're doing, but takes a toll on the machinery.
100%.
The maintenance on the machinery itself.
And that's a whole other, you know, gamut from COVID is getting all the tooling in. You know, there's been such a delay in the machinery and the tooling, especially finding new suppliers for the same parts and pieces. There's been acquisitions of different companies within the...
Is it all sales? Like, are we talking stateside?
No, a lot of it comes from Europe.
Oh.
Yeah, a lot of it comes from Europe.
Okay.
We can get most of it in the States, or you have kind of offshoot guys, machinery guys that can do it here. So it all depends. But a lot of the machines are European made machines, which has proven difficult.
Because I guess they're doing a lot of it over there.
I would think, yeah.
Just the work itself, right? They're doing it there. Yeah. That's what I'm assuming. I mean, a lot of it's concrete.
Or a lot
based,
of it
right?
is already made there, and they just bring it over to the States and they distribute it that way.
And I mean, is it kind of like woodworking? You got different grits and you got
100%. Yeah, for polished,
that's exactly what it is,
for polished
right?
concrete. Yeah, and in terms of grinding, yeah, you have different tooling, different diamond grits on it.
You getting a lot of people asking for residential polished concrete, or are they just still looking to put some sort of
pricing on a job right now? 300,000 square feet of polished concrete, it kind of gives that industrial look through the unit, which some people are still after. I saw kind of a boom of that, I would say 2-3 years ago.
Yeah,
and it's kind of changed a little bit more to engineered hardwood again, like kind of the cleaner finishes. Yeah. But I like the look of polished.
I like it if it's heated. I like it.
Yeah, it's cold.
But most time it's not heated, right?
Well, in February, you'll be feeling it.
Well, the problem is it's thermal bridging, right?
Because
they're connected right to the balconies, which 100%. Go outside, and we get our winters.
Exactly.
And that's going to transfer right into the
right
inside,
through.
Which is going to, it looks beautiful, but you can't walk barefoot on it.
No. And it's a nightmare to clean or keep clean.
Is it?
Why?
But if
it shows.
It's polished and it's sealed?
It shows.
Does it?
Well, yeah. Think about it. If you walk on your laminate flooring, even with your shoes on or your slippers on.
You won't see anything.
You won't see anything. But you'll see the footprints on
it's true.
On the polished concrete. So it just depends what you're looking to achieve.
Any interesting projects that you guys have?
Well, we've got Nordstrom going on. We're on 18 high-rises right now, scattered all throughout Burlington, Hamilton, Toronto. We've got a long-term healthcare coming up, which those are good ones for us, where they do the precast concrete. We do the topping all the way throughout to cover the cambers. And we've got a couple big high-rises with the podium decks and all the commercial space underneath that. So we're busy. I mean, it's not going to be a record year, and I don't think it will be for a lot of trades.
No, you guys are sustaining, man.
We're sustaining, right?
Yeah, and you're keeping the workforce going.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And keeping the clients that are giving us work happy. And, you know, it gives you an opportunity to kind of, you know, recalibrate too as well, right? And reestablish what your parameters are within your crews and what your expectations are throughout the year and kind of refocus, I guess you could say, because when you're in bonkers mode and you got, you know, 42 sites going, you're not really focused on changing the dynamic of your work rather than, you know, because it gives you a little bit of a forethought and hindsight in the same time when you've got a little bit of a slowdown, which is nice.
You know what I find fascinating, King, is when you guys are, and I'll just use you guys, when you're talking about polishing or grinding down concrete,
yeah,
you guys have it down to a science, like, and the conversation with a client or prospecting client or engineer or what have you,
yeah,
you guys are having conversations that are just easily right over the average person.
Yes.
Because you're talking really in depth into concrete applications, grinding, correct, knives, all that, the machine.
Correct.
Like, how is that world? Like, how is that navigating that conversation with people? Like, are they aware of what you guys bring to the table, or are they just saying, it's concrete, man, just grind it down?
There's differences there. I mean, you've got the bigger outfits that have experienced site supers or project managers that, you know, have been through the mill and have seen that type of application time and time again. Those guys are in the language, let's call it. So I don't have to explain too much or speak about the elevations or cutting to a certain extent with those guys. But when you're talking about the high-rise residential, you have a lot of people coming in from school direct or coming out of school direct and coming on these sites because those developers or builders are building so fast, they haven't had time to really bring up their talent within their company. So that's an educational process on that side. On the high-rise residential is explaining not only what we do, but when to do it.
Yeah.
And how it doesn't affect other trades and how the schedule would benefit from this timing rather than this timing. And you're getting a lot of people in the last couple of years, as I said, coming right out of school that think they know what building is without any experience. And, you know, you're 2 months into the project and it's a fucking gong show. Like, and it not only hurts the guys doing the job, but it hurts the guys after them and after them and after them. And it's just a domino effect. And
that's what I mean, is that that conversation is such a specialty.
It is.
It's almost like discussing, you know, the inner workings of a watch,
yeah,
to a watchmaker. And they know specifically everything that's going on. Yeah. And this is applicable to every level of construction,
100%,
including concrete. And right, most people would just look at it like, you're grinding down concrete, dude.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah,
all you're doing. And I'm, yeah, like, that's not all you're doing.
No.
There's a science behind
it. It's an artistry.
Yeah. And I think
like 98% of the trades are artistry. That's why you have different skill sets in the artistry, because you got a guy that knows what he's doing and has experience doing it, and you got a guy that's just starting off. And you can see the difference there. And back to the educational process, I mean, you work hand in hand with other trades too. So you can tell an experienced, call it kitchen installer, right? He's going to switch his end gables a little bit of variance to make, yep, sure that he's got a bit of tolerance to play.
Yep.
If you got a guy that doesn't know that, he's going to go measure right down to the slab and then screw it up. So you've got different conversations happening from different trades to make sure everything lines up and the building's built properly.
Are we building too fast? Can you?
I think we were. I think we were. let me rephrase that. I think there's opportunity to build if you've got the right people doing it.
Yeah.
I've got, you know, we've worked with every builder in Toronto, and I can tell you firsthand, I can see the difference of quality of one tower and the other, and who I'd buy a unit off and who I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Who's cutting corners, who's not. But again, I think that comes back to also the red tape. I mean, it puts a lot of bumpers in front of the developers to save money rather than, hey, let's give the customer a good end product. And some people pay to have it fixed, some people don't. And what's hidden underneath the floor is hidden underneath the floor.
You don't see it. I can't see it, so then it's not there.
Right. Until, you know, 10 years down the road and your flooring's all wobbly.
But, I mean, there's an argument to put forward where most of these homeowners buying these condos, they might live there for a year or two, and then they'll rent it out or sell it. So it's like, it's not their problem anymore.
Which I think that was the same thing, I think, years ago. But now many people aren't doing that because you're not making money off those units.
Yeah.
You know, you're actually in the negative.
Yeah.
You know, I'll speak for myself. I had bought downtown a couple of units, and it just isn't a good investment anymore. Number one, you're buying it for $700,000, $800,000, $900,000 now rather than $300,000, $400,000 and make a little bit of coin when you sell it. But even renting it out, you're losing $400 or $500 a month. So you're not even paying for the actual asset, you're actually paying into it more than you should be.
Yeah.
And you're not making good money if you sell it anymore.
Highest maintenance fees outside of, I guess, Vancouver.
Yeah.
Which is insane.
Insane.
So, I mean, why do we have such high maintenance fees? Because we're expecting these buildings to start falling apart because they weren't.
That's a good question. One I don't have the answer to.
No, I'm just stunned sometimes. I meet people and they tell me, you know, what their mortgage is. They tell me what the maintenance fee. And yeah. I'm like, why is that so much?
Well, and you go to other cities down even in the States, let's call it, just as comparison. They're 20% of what our maintenance fees would be.
It's insane.
And they're just as nice buildings. Yeah. They're built the same way. It's not like they came up with a different system of building. It's just a different economic system, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I think Toronto's just being taken advantage of because Toronto can be taken advantage of. That's all it is. There's a lot going on, right?
And you look in comparison, even New York City. I mean, New York City was, you know, $3,000 a square foot. Toronto's still undervalued if you compare New York to Toronto. And Toronto's coming up to a New York City standard. I mean, not as many people, but getting there. So I think it still is an undervalued market. But you need foreign investment, you need the red tape gone, and you need more buildings, more things to do. You can't be charging top dollar when there's not a lot of things to do.
The major difference between Toronto and New York City is New York City has the infrastructure to move people.
Yes.
Toronto never had that.
No.
Never will have that.
No.
We have the worst infrastructure to move 100%. People. And I'm talking about pedestrian, cycle, car, public.
Just getting downtown now, it takes an hour and a half.
Like, that's just stupid. Back in my days in the 80s. It's
20 minutes in a cab.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
You can get that. And it's really funny to watch. What was I seeing something? Oh, yeah, I was just flipping channels, and all of a sudden I came across Pumping Iron, Schwarzenegger's documentary back in the 70s, right? And it opens up at that ballet center.
I'm coming at home, and I'm
kind of But there was a shot where you're looking at them with the ballet instructor, and then they're looking out in the street there, and it's like you can count. It's like one car, two car.
Yeah.
Three cars on the road.
Yeah, yeah.
Four lanes of road.
Yeah.
And like no congestion, no nothing. And I'm sure that Toronto at some point back in the 60s and 70s was like that downtown, 100%. King Street and everything.
Yeah. Well, even when my younger years, which wasn't that long ago, it wasn't as busy as it is now. Even getting down there, it's 20 minutes one way, 20 minutes back. And I thought that was a long trip back then. It's ridiculous.
It's an hour plus easily.
And now, like, people have no desire to live downtown because of that. Like getting in and out, it's a waste of your day. Who wants to commute 3 hours a day just to get in and out of the city?
And you would think that if you took public, it'd be different, but it's not, right?
Even that's a scary thought.
But also the whole Taylor Swift shut everything down so then she can get in quietly.
Couldn't believe that.
Are you really that valuable of an individual? Honestly, I don't think so. I'm sorry to say, but
I agree with you there.
Like you don't shut down arteries to let her.
Main city, yeah. No, I'm in agreement there. Yeah.
I don't know, but somebody had to pay, you know, use taxpayer dollars to get a whole family tickets there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
but I mean, it's such a shame because I agree with you. Toronto's undervalued where we could be so much more.
Yeah, and we have the potential to be much more. And, you know, that even comes back to even, I feel like the design of the buildings, you know, you see a lot of the same design.
Well, we haven't even gotten to that yet.
You know, the architects, whoever's designing these buildings, need to sit back and create a little bit.
You remember how, not boring, I wouldn't say boring, traditional London used to look like back in the 80s?
Yeah, yeah.
And then they started bringing in the towers.
Yeah.
But they have beautiful towers.
Yeah, and they're all different.
Yeah.
They're not mirroring each other.
And Toronto, it's like the same.
Well, I think Anthony Bourdain said in one of his episodes when he visited Toronto.
What did he say?
I can't quote directly, but he just said it's a boring looking city.
It's an extremely boring looking city.
He said it's an extremely boring looking city. And he said it's a great city. I love coming here, but it's boring to look at.
The most exciting thing that I saw anybody talk about recently about any building in Toronto that's going up or close to completion would be the CIBC building with the diamond windows?
Yep, yep.
And I'm like, that's interesting. That's what you guys find interesting.
Yeah, yeah. There's no difference because you know what it is. It's the plates. They keep the plates square. Yeah,
exactly.
Because
the same.
It's just fly forms going up and boom, boom, boom.
Build whatever you want to build. It's Lego design style. Whatever you want to design.
Yeah.
In this shape.
Yeah, it's Lego style. It's just and then everything falls. The window guys have already manufactured those windows before, so it's just everybody falls in line rather than stepping a little bit outside the box and creating a little bit
too much of a risk.
I would think, yeah. Well, and cost. But you look at, like, and that's another thing of the other areas. They build these, you know, monarch buildings that stand the test of time and design. And it's something to wow over. And that's what brings people into the city. You know, that's what brings industry. That's what brings investment. So we got to change the outlook a little bit rather than cookie cutter and change it up a little bit.
You can only imagine what the tourism like when CN Tower was completed.
Can you imagine? Yeah.
Like, first of all, before that, Toronto wasn't really a target.
There on the map, yeah.
No, it wasn't. But then you build this structure here, which at the time became the tallest structure ever.
Yeah.
And you're like, of course you're going to bring a lot of people coming in for here to take a look at that one structure.
Yeah.
What are they coming to Toronto for now?
Well, look at Dubai. You look at what they're building
over a 20-year period.
Yeah, it's quick. And they're not only just one. I think they got three or four towers. But
they're all unique and different, and they've got purpose behind them.
In the middle of the desert.
There's the one building where it has that automatic shade system on the cladding, on the exterior cladding, where it's to prevent sandstorms. And I'm like, that's clever. So it's cool. We can be applying the same thing here in Toronto for snowstorms or whatever it is.
You know, it creates creativity, and it creates things that even underlying things that guys coming up and say, oh, I love that building. I'm going to build something like that one day, even for the younger kids looking at it.
Introducing Alt Labor Solutions, the game changer for contractors and laborers. Are you a contractor needing skilled labor, or have labor in need of quick shifts? Or how about buying, selling, or renting tools, material, and equipment? Connect easily with contractors and find resources hassle-free through Alt Labor Solutions online platform. Post job listings with project details, browse public resumes, and choose the right person for the job. Explore their job board for new opportunities and connect with top talent. Alt Labor Solutions revolutionizes the labor industry with a user-friendly interface, secure payments, and a supportive team. Visit them at altlaborsolutions.com and start connecting with other contractors today. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
I like to think that the residential market in the downtown core, you start seeing people do interesting things on those homes.
Yeah.
They're trying new ideas, but then, you know, they skew a little heavily on the contemporary side of things where they start making it more very modern straight, box, modern box.
Huge glass walls.
Things like that, right? Next to the traditional Toronto gable end home, right? But you're right. The towers themselves, I have not seen a tower that's... And everyone's talking about whatever, One Bloor Street.
The one? Yeah, yeah.
The only thing fascinating about it is that...
It's the height.
That's all, yeah.
It's the height.
And that Apple was there originally, and then now Apple's not there anymore. Gone.
Yeah. Whatever. And that's gone through, I think it's on its fourth builder now.
When's it projected to be completed?
I actually priced out that job.
Did you? You quoted
back
that?
I want to say 2019, 2018... And that was for the original floor leveling package. And
this is before the construction
started? Before it even started, yeah. Before it even started. And then now I think they're projected by end of 2027, I think. End of 2027.
So maybe there's
a bunch of financial issues there.
But that's your case study for trying something different.
Right.
This is what potentially
might happen. Really isn't that much of a different design. It's still a square building. It's
still a square building.
The only thing that they had problems with was the columns below. I think it was the first three floors of columns that they spent like 2 years making. Because the engineers couldn't
figure because they're
all on an angle. And I mean, that's out of my wheelhouse. That's more of an engineer side. But it took a long time.
Such a shame.
It is because but that was a step in the right direction. I felt when I saw that, and you see it all over all the media saying, "Hey, Toronto's building a 98-story building. This is going to be a super tall," and it brings a little excitement.
Yep,
and we need to see more of that. Not even just super tall, but just different things happening in Toronto. I think that would bring a lot more eyes to the city.
They should maybe put the line in Lake Ontario, like Dubai, and just build the line.
There you go. Now you're thinking. Don't know how clean that would
that'll
be.
That'll never fly, man. That'll never fly because you'll get all the island people just complaining that they keep running into it, right?
No kidding.
It's all mirror based on both sides, right? But that would never fly.
Ferries wouldn't work,
No, I don't know. Like, there was just, like, you're right. And I don't even know what's going on in Ontario Place now. You got that spa, whatever, they knocked that down.
Who the hell's going to go there? Like, where are you going to park your car? Are you going to go for a 3-hour walk to go to a spa? I don't know.
No, you're going
to
get one of the millions of Ubers that are hanging around creating congestion.
Yeah. I mean, at least they're doing something different because I don't know. I used to go to Ontario Place as a kid and just drive those little boats, those little ferry boats around and bumper boats or whatever.
I remember that.
And it was cool, but it just sat there and it looked like it was just desolate for years and years. So at least they're doing something.
They are, but I won't judge completely until I see what they've done.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's a car crash, then I'll be like, oh, now I understand it.
Yeah, yeah. No, I haven't seen anything recently about it other than I think somebody died there during the construction, didn't they?
During demo?
Yeah, I think somebody did.
Oh.
I think a scissor lift fell on someone, which is, yeah. That's the last time I heard something about
it. I didn't hear anything about that, no. But
no. Got to be careful out there.
Well, which city in Canada is actually doing anything? Vancouver used to always just be a wall of condos, right?
Well, because they're all trying to get the mountain view, right? The mountain and the waterfront view. Same thing like there. Miami. Miami doesn't have much character in terms of the buildings really either along the waterfront because you're just going for view, right? Where else? I mean, nowhere that I could think of in Ontario really is changing the game when it comes to aesthetics of the building.
No.
That I can think of. I mean, Hamilton's got some character, but it's just because it's all the older homes, but they're not really doing major high rise. No, it's all more mid rise and stuff like that.
It's all mid rise stuff.
Yeah. But.
And people still have this stigma attached to Hamilton, even though they're trying to become Toronto. And a lot of people are moving out that way, but they've become very expensive nowadays.
I was going to say, it was an affordability thing, right? It was
20 years ago, it was very reasonable. You get a
4,000 square foot house out there for $500,000, call it 5-6 years ago. I think those days are gone because a lot of people did it. And now they're looking to get their payout on what they bought. But, I mean, moving into Toronto, I think those days are behind us a little bit, into the core, I would think, unless something changes.
But you get such a young generation that is desperate to live in Toronto and stay in Toronto so they can walk to their favorite cafe, favorite restaurant, favorite everything. Do you think
that's still the case?
I think they want it. Can they afford it? I don't know.
That's the whole question, right?
Right? Like when I was a kid, you know, if you were striving to be, you know, making 100 grand as an adult, that was a huge thing. Now 100%. You have to be making over 100 grand just to survive.
Just to live.
So I don't understand how these kids are all making this coin living downtown.
And spending $3,000 a month on a studio apartment. Like,
if you're renting it, I don't know if they're buying them. Like they can afford them. Can they carry the mortgage? We don't know that.
I don't know. I mean, when I sold my unit, it was a foreign student that bought mine. And that was a bit of a process.
Because of coming into here?
Foreign investment, buying a condo.
I've only been in a handful of the condos, and I mean, like, the workmanship's not the greatest.
Man. No.
And I understand why it's not the greatest.
Yeah.
You know, you're forced as a company to do each of the trades at the bare minimum costs. Mm-hmm. So for you to even survive and make money.
Well, and scheduling. Yeah. I mean, you're hammered by the schedule.
Yeah.
Like, you got to make this whole floor done by a week. Sometimes trades cut corners to make that schedule. Just get to the next floor, next floor, next floor. And then you start putting your finishes on and it's a little crooked. Well, we can kind of bend it this way.
I'll make it fit.
Yeah, exactly. I'll make it fit. So, I mean, I think that's just the nature of the beast, to be honest.
And then the price that they charge for these units.
Well, that's what comes back to the good builders and the not so good builders. They come back and they actually rectify it how it should be rectified, or they turn a blind eye.
That's the unfortunate part.
And that's where you see the difference in the quality.
Yeah. You think it's going to get better? Once we start,
I think it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Once we get back to it eventually, but that's not going to happen.
Well, and I think we are going to have another boom. It's going to happen, I would say, 2027,
That's what I've been saying to people.
Yeah, 2027, I think, is just going to go gangbusters again. So we're going to have a little bit of a year and a half, 2 years
struggle,
keep the lights on and just you know, carry on, and then it's going back to gangbusters again, which is something to look forward to. And I hope by that time everybody's kind of learned their lessons and what to do, what not to do, and we know the bad and keep the good.
It's true. You know what, I haven't been on the island yet and looked back at Toronto. It is a pretty boring looking city, man.
It is. And the amount of high rise we do as a company, I mean, I'm on six towers a day just looking at them, and it's just.
And you see the view.
I see the same thing over and over and over again. There's just no innovation. There's no difference at all. Like just the sheer walls are the same. The plates the same. The balconies are the exact same. Windows going in the same. The views, I mean, they're obviously the views, but you're not looking at anything different. You're looking at the same tower you're living in opposite of you.
Especially when you're coming in on the Gardner there and you start seeing that whole row of.
Yeah.
I guess there's that one building, which is that slice that's right on the split between.
10 York? Is that
10 York?
Where the pie one? That's yeah. I think it's 10 York. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, I'm pretty sure it's not a residence at the height of the Gardner, though. I think it's an office space or something.
No, right at the Gardner? Yeah, right, I think it's Gardner. Office. But you see a couple of them, like their balconies are right beside the Gardner. Like,
what I see sometimes when you're driving around there is just the film of dirt.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's not even just on the glass. It's on all the balcony, the metal, gross. Everything. And yeah. It's not even just like dust. It's a film. Yeah. Like you can almost peel it off.
100%. Window squeegee every day. It's just gross. Yeah.
And I guess some people like that, but it doesn't.
Not my forte, but maybe that's the affordability side. Maybe that's a little cheaper unit just because you're 10 feet away from the highway. You know, it's.
You guys are also doing balconies, no?
We do. Yeah. We do the waterproof coatings on there.
You start seeing a lot of the older units, they start doing the whole balcony
restorations.
Restoration work and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That becomes but I guess there's only so many times you can restore it, right? Before you got to rebuild
it. Before you got to reform it or retop it.
Yeah.
It depends, again, on the quality of the initial build. So if you got rebar sticking out, that just deteriorates it so quickly.
Yeah.
But you're seeing a lot of that in kind of the old government housing. You know, you're seeing a lot of those coming up. But now the government's weighing their options. Do we restore it or do we rip them down and build new?
This is Toronto. We rip everything down.
Yeah. Yeah. So in terms of the restoration on the residential side, I don't see it too often. I'm just seeing new construction. But maybe that'll change now in the next year or two.
Is it actually cheaper to demo the old and rebuild new instead of restoring the old?
Depends the size and scale of what you can build. I mean, if you've got a two-story, call it 40-unit building, and you can build up for, you know, half the size of what it is, but you're just going upwards, and you can put 100 units in there, I mean, then they start weighing their options. And the banks salivate at that because it's just reoccurring.
Yeah, that's all it is.
And you're seeing a lot of the condos go into rental now, right? Because that's the route it's going. It's too expensive to buy, unfortunately, yeah.
Do you guys get into vertical?
No. No.
Do you ever need to do a vertical grinding on concrete?
We have.
What application would you need to do that?
We shear walls, so if you have an issue with the form and you've got pockets in the actual shear wall, then we kind of form that up or refinish that. But typically, no.
It's very rare.
Very rare.
What about the ceiling? You never have to grind the ceiling.
That's typically the forming guys do that.
Yeah, so they'll normally put the form there and they peel it off.
Peel it off.
What magic trick you got? That's what you got.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there might be a little bit of grinding on seams or something like that.
Yeah, like they usually take care of their slag. So if you got slag sitting where the form was and you got a kind of slag sitting on the outside, forming guys will come in and chip that out. That's part of their contract.
What if you get a client who wants the ceiling polished?
See, the slab polished?
Yeah.
Or the walls?
The ceiling and the walls polished.
The ceiling would be a bit of a nightmare to polish.
To polish it?
Oh, yeah.
It'd have to be done by hand. Not
There's only one piece of equipment I can think of, and it would have to be all done by hand grinder, because it's basically like it's a yellow contraption that flips the hand grinder upside down, and you kind of lift it up, and that's how they grind the ceiling.
So you're basically telescoping it up.
Yeah,
and then
it's reversed hand grinder, so you got to think there's 8-9 steps in polishing, and we usually use, you know, the 36-inch grinders to do that. No,
you wouldn't be able to do that. You'd have to use like 7-inch ones or something. You'd be
doing that for 2 months in one unit.
Yeah, but polished concrete on the ceiling would look pretty good.
It would look good. It's an interesting thing to explore.
What's the cost of polished concrete just standing on the floor?
Depending. If you're 1,500 grit, you know, you're anywhere from $8 to $12 a square foot. Depending.
That's not crazy.
No, depending on the size of the job. It's
cheaper than engineered hardwood.
Yeah.
These days.
Yeah. But again, it's the look.
I was insane. It would look good on the ceiling in a loft application.
In a loft application, it would.
It would look good on the ceiling.
I think more or less what they do is they just flat grind it and put a clear or matte sealer on it. It would still have the sheen. It just wouldn't show the aggregate like it would on a polished floor.
Mm-hmm. Just trying to think of what would look good.
Or you can go high gloss finish on the top. That would give it the same idea.
So you would just grind it, surface grind it, and high
surface
gloss
grind it, and then you'd you put a high gloss sealer on it.
No risk of seeing the swirls, if you just.
Well, you would with a hand grinder.
Yeah, you're gonna see the swirls, right?
For sure.
I'm just trying to think how that would look.
It's an interesting. I haven't explored polishing the ceiling, but that's an interesting aspect.
I'm just thinking, even just like if you had buildings in concrete on the outside, that's the cladding, and then you polish that and see what that looks like on the outside.
You're densifying and sealing the concrete, so you're protected from the elements.
How many European countries do we know that have beautiful concrete-based buildings?
For sure. I'd say that's predominant in European countries, for sure.
They're not polished to that extent.
No.
But what if you took that?
Yeah.
And that would look pretty interesting,
100%.
Right?
100%. again, that comes back to the creativity of the initial design and building.
I'm just throwing out ideas there, man. Right. See what happens.
I'm all ears.
Architects are listening or whatever, but
100%.
But then again, it's a cost factor because you got to choose. We got to get the same glass, the same metal, the same clips, the same everything,
right?
Because that's the cost.
Well, and that's what you see. You see everything just so systematic in Toronto building. It's you see the same window guys, the same concrete guys, the same forms. It's
boring as hell.
You're just jumping ship. Yeah,
I'd like to see some interesting things like with concrete, with steel. Well, that's
what excited me about getting into the building industry in the first place, right? It was just, number one, it's you're learning everything brand new when you're young and you're, how the hell do you do that? How's that guy doing that? Yeah. You see a guy that's just killing it over there and you're like, how the fuck did you get that good at doing that? And that kind of builds it. And then you start getting your first couple buildings and you're like, fuck, this is cool. Big, big open room and so on and so forth. And it gets grander and grander and grander. But then you hit the stage where certain companies are out, you do it day in, day out. And it's just the same thing now in Toronto. There's no excitement. There's no difference. There's no...
paying the bills.
Yeah, yeah.
When it comes to spray foam and blown-in insulation for your next project, there's no better team than Mohammed and his crew at Foamit. With well-educated, skilled installers, Foamit doesn't just get the job done. They do it right. They take the time to properly estimate and educate you on every aspect of your project, ensuring your building envelope is airtight and energy efficient. As leaders in the industry, they bring a deep understanding of building science to every job, making sure your project stands the test of time. But don't just take their word for it. Past clients constantly praise the quality of work and professionalism of the Foamit team. From homeowners to large-scale contractors, feedback has been overwhelmingly positive, with clients appreciating their attention to detail, the thoroughness of their crew, and the results that speak for themselves. At Foamit, they pride themselves on building lasting relationships through exceptional service, reliability, and the commitment to exceeding expectations on every single project. Whether you're insulating a new build, upgrading an older property, or tackling a commercial project, Foamit is your trusted partner in achieving energy efficiency and comfort. They understand the importance of getting it right the first time, and that's why so many clients return to them for future projects. Connect with Foamit today. Reach them at 416-893-8712 or 647-961-9777. Email them at mohammed@foamit.ca or visit them at www.foamit.ca. Follow them on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn to see their latest projects and innovations. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
I mean, I'm not complaining. We're doing okay. We're doing good. I mean, Toronto as a whole and building is doing. But I would hope that somebody
missed opportunities.
Yeah, I would hope somebody is watching and changes it up a little bit in terms of the looks and architecture of
Toronto. I mean, it'd be nice to see a building structure that's actually architectural concrete pour.
That'd be cool. Even the universities or colleges, something like that. You know, architectural design college. That'd be a place to try it.
I mean, York is kind of like that.
Yeah. Yeah, they tried it a little bit. I went to the hockey rink there a couple of times.
Okay, what else do I want to know about GFI?
Well, we're building our company up. We're kind of going to be the one-stop shop when it comes to building concrete, epoxy coatings, traffic toppings. We're going to explore other options. We're not stopping.
How's epoxy these days? It's a lot better than what it was like 20 years ago, right?
Yeah, yeah.
There's no UV issues with epoxy anymore.
No, no. It's a good industry. I mean, there's tons of people doing it. There's tons of manufacturers, tons of people doing it. Again, different applications. You've got food grade facilities that have certain specifications you got to meet. You've got garage epoxy. You've got trap. So there's a bunch of different products and applications.
Is there an epoxy that's a waterproof?
Oh, yeah.
They're all waterproof.
They're all waterproof.
Yeah, because they're not penetrable. Like you can't.
Well, there's some that hot, like temperate waters you can't put on. So if you got boiling hot water, you can't put it on, or else it'll curl it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's why a lot of the food grade facilities require different types of epoxy to ensure that you can have all different temperature liquids on it and washdowns and things like that. And chemical resistance.
It's kind of funny. Well, the chemical resistance is paramount, right? Mm-hmm. But I kind of find it like when epoxy started making a little bit of a residential stink, mm-hmm. it was all about the flakes, right?
Yeah.
Then people got tired of the flakes.
Yes.
Now it's all about the swirls.
Right.
And I got tired of the swirls the moment I saw the first swirl.
Yeah, you and me both. I'm a flat color guy.
This looks good. Yeah. Just pick a color, man.
Just a flat color.
Period. I don't like. I'm not even a fan of the flakes. But
the car showrooms and stuff. Yeah. They do all that. Yeah.
I don't need these. I mean, swirls.
Some are like if you're doing your company logo in it or something like that. Okay.
If you're doing a piece of art just there.
But I don't want a giant marble on my floor. Like no. It doesn't look good to me.
Or your favorite bowling ball there.
Right.
Like I don't need a rose petal encased in epoxy or something.
No, it's not my forte. No. But I like clean looks. Like if I my garage, I got flat gray in it. It just looks nice. It's just classy. It looks nice. Everything fits in there. But yeah,
I don't get the swirls. So I'm just waiting on what's going to be after the swirls. What are they going to? I think they're going to go back to just colors.
They just
choose one color.
Yeah, that's it. Colors.
And I guess, can you still do epoxy matte?
Mm-hmm.
You can do a matte finish.
Yep.
Because as much as I like the shiny finish, the glossy finish, I'm not a fan of it in winter months.
I just got the sample book for next year, and I think it's 140 different types of textures and colorations just in epoxy colors now. So flat, semi-flat, high gloss, semi-gloss, textured. So you got your different sand broadcasts throughout it.
Wow. Yeah. And any color you want.
Any color. And they can make your specific color. So we were doing a Ferrari dealership, and they needed the Ferrari red.
Yeah.
Right? So we had to get them, we had to get the coloration and do it properly.
You did the whole floor red?
Whole floor.
This was the garage or the
showroom? This is the mechanic shop. Yes, the garage section. So they wanted the whole floor Ferrari red, and we did it for them.
Did they put the logo in there too?
The logo.
The horse?
Yep.
Really?
Yeah, the black horse.
That must have been cool.
It was a cool one. That was a cool one.
Did they provide the artwork for?
They provided the artwork, so the horse was there. They provided the horse, which is specific location, size, everything, and the specific Ferrari red. So that's when we had to go to our manufacturer and say, look, this is the color. We need you to match it. They went to their color guy and specifically tinted it to the right color.
That must have been kind of fun to do.
We had to do a small mock-up area to make sure it was the red that they wanted before we did the whole thing and sign off on it and go. Yeah.
That must have been pretty cool.
It was neat. You get the odd neat one here and there. It's not just doing an old garage.
And all of a sudden, like Honda or Toyota calls you up. You're like, yeah, we're not interested.
Yeah. Do the Toyota logo.
Kia's on the phone.
Corolla Gold for me, huh? That's a little less exciting, yeah.
You never know. You might get Tesla.
Maybe. Knock on wood.
I don't know. We'll see what happens. Which dealership was that?
I was out in Vaughan. Was 4 years ago, 5 years ago now.
How big is the shop, the mechanic shop there?
Oh, shit. Going back, I think it was about 4,000 square feet, 3 or 4,000 square feet.
It's a good size shop.
Yeah, like four or five bays. That was a cool one. Don't get those all the time, but those are kind of neat ones.
And then it would last a good chunk of time, right? Yeah. You don't have to redo that anytime soon.
No. Those are at least 15 years, 20 years for that.
Yeah, that's all it is. And then
depending on the beating, obviously. I mean, I don't think there's 100 Ferraris going in and out of there a day. It's not like a Toyota dealership. I think you get the odd one and they take care of it.
Is it a pain in the ass to grind down epoxy?
Yes.
Just because of all the chemicals?
Tensile strength. It's a strong product. And depending if it's trowel down epoxy, like I got a concrete shaver that we use and... we did a brewery, one of my neighbors, he's an epoxy coating guy as well, and he got this brewery in the distillery district. So we went down there, started grinding the epoxy off, and it was like almost an inch thick. So really? It was just coating after coating after coating. And we started trying to grind it, didn't work, so I got my concrete shaver, which can take off about a half inch in one pass, and even that was shutting down a few times, just trying to get through it.
Why was there so much?
So much. So I guess just tendon after tendon, just reapply.
Oh, they just kept reapplying on top.
We saw like 7 or 8 different colors. Yeah.
That must have been a pain in the ass.
Pain in the ass, yeah. And that is a dusty job.
He got the job first?
He got the job, yeah, and then contracted me to come in to
remove it.
He couldn't get it. He didn't have the equipment to do it.
And yet, how do you really tell? You can't tell that there's an issue.
That's a line item, right? this is what we could find. This is what the price is if we do.
So how do you run the business knowing, okay, you walk in there, now you take that stress on the machinery. Obviously, the machinery is going to take a good toll on it. So
those type of jobs, you got to do time and material. I mean, that's
all you got to do.
Because you don't know. You don't know. I mean, you can try your best to quantify it and make sure you're in the ballpark. But until you do a mock-up or at least one strip and know what you're looking at, you're going blind.
And what was it being opened up to again? Another brewery?
It was another brewery, yeah.
Another brewery, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, yeah, so, I mean, and that's the things you learn over years and years and years of doing it is, you know, no matter what you've done or what you've accomplished, there's always something new that can come your way or stump you a little bit. So you got to cover your back a little bit in your contracts and your line items and make sure that you're on the same expectation as the client. They're well aware of what you can do and,
yeah, for sure.
And what you're looking at and what can happen and the price that to rectify.
So how does the whole greenwashing come in if someone's like, you got to stay green and but you're removing all this chemical stuff?
You're talking about like the environmental side?
Yeah. Like, do they get involved or do they have a right to get involved?
We've never had an issue. I mean, we still lock down the area.
Yeah.
Tarpet, negative air, yeah, all of our guys sure. have respirators.
But disposal of it is just normal disposal?
Normal disposal. I think it's more airborne that you'd be...
That's what concerned about.
That's more concerned. Yeah. I mean, we bag it, throw it in our disposal, and the disposal company disposes of it. They know what's in there. But no, we've had no issues other than airborne quality issues.
Yeah, that's, but that's all that falls under silicon.
Exactly.
And all the workers.
Which is typical in yeah, construction exactly. all around. So as long as our guys have the respirators on, eye protection,
then you're fine.
Then we're fine.
But I just figured that the green police might come along knocking on the door. And like, how do you expect us to do this?
No.
There's no way to do this.
No, we haven't any had other any way. Issues there. We've had some issues. Like, we do a lot of school gyms. So a lot of asbestos we test for.
Yeah,
a lot of mold underneath the wood. So we do testing there before we started going to grind. And we've had a couple issues there where we had to get an abatement company in to spray the mold first. But
why would they're all on grade, don't? Basketball courts?
You would think.
They're not.
Most are. Some of them are on sleepers, actually. So
really?
Yeah.
So air is getting in there.
Yes.
Mm.
So we just did one. The slab had a waterproof coating on it and then had a bunch of sleepers, and they laid poly underneath the sleepers. So it's basically a floating floor.
Yeah.
And it had water.
Because the poly was trapping all the water from
exactly.
the concrete.
Exactly.
Why didn't they go to the science class and ask the grade 9?
Exactly.
What would happen if you
and
do that?
And this is called a 67-year-old school. So that water's been sitting there for a long, long time.
And it got, even just that little bit of void, it got soaked into the wood.
100%. So all of that was black mold.
Whoa!
Oh, yeah. And that's, and think about it, the kids are playing in that gym for...
No shit, it was all there. If black mold is airborne.
Yep.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so we lifted up the first piece of wood, okay, shut it down, and...
Yeah, you had to.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you removed it all and then grinded it
out. Then we had an abatement company come in, they had to do it, seal everything down, and... Had to do it during March break because kids couldn't be in the school.
It all got done in 1 week?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a small gym. 2,000 okay, square okay. feet. 2,000 or 3,000 square feet.
And then they put the new ones on sleepers as well? Or
No. Let me grind the slab, waterproofed, and then did a new topic.
Yeah. Just pull it towards you.
Yeah, yeah, there we go. There we go.
I know. You get comfortable. That's why I'm constantly moving it. But, yeah. That's interesting, like that.
Yeah, and those are the things, that, and that's, again, why construction's interesting. You don't know what you're going to walk into all the time and how to solve it. I mean, these are just problems that you got to solve. And that's one thing I love about it. It's just, it's nothing the same day in, day out.
Nope, never is.
Whether it be with people or with the material, it's a different thing every day, which it's fun to be part of.
You guys done a lot of government sector projects?
No, I would say government funded.
Like schools and stuff.
We don't build new schools. We haven't done that yet. We do a lot of, like TDSB, we do a lot of their stuff for the gyms, but not new construction, more restoration side. But we did do a lot of government funded old age homes. Like we did the Ajax hospital out there, which was, that was an amazing project. But no, I wouldn't say... New government builds we haven't.
But none of, I guess, public transit or subways or...
No.
Don't get into that world yet?
We would like to. I mean, but it's also a different animal. I mean, you see what goes on in Eglinton there. I mean, and when I bought the business, I mean, we've 3 or 4x the size of our business since I bought. So... we're really focused on, you know, building the pillars of the business first, making sure we had the back of house, the front of house, all of that organized before we expand. And now we're in the position to expand, and those are markets we want to tap into. It's just how and when, and I mean, obviously there's economic turmoil now. I don't think I want to get into large scale government projects right now because
we don't know what the government's going to
do. We don't know what the government's going to do or whether they can pay for it anymore either. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, everything's on the table when it comes to pricing at work and opportunity. It's just whether I want to perform at our highest capacity on every job. And I don't want to get thinned out and not perform what's made us successful to date so far.
So I know you mentioned earlier about the European. So are they coming out with all the best machinery, the best tools, the best products to use?
Is I wouldn't that say told? The best. I would just say they're the originators of most of it.
Okay.
I mean, you're seeing, I think BlastTrack and Husqvarna and those companies have started to get into it now, which is good. Yeah, it's more of the parts and the tooling to get them accessible.
It still hasn't gone back up to regular production?
It has now, slowly but surely. But, I mean, there's issues all around. It's such a lag for everything still.
Protect your investment one drop at a time. Your home or project deserves the very best when it comes to waterproofing. Trust nothing less than the service that guarantees you peace of mind and lasting protection. Meet Antonio, the expert behind AquaStop Waterproofing. Whether you're a homeowner wanting to keep your basement dry or a contractor in search of a reliable partner, Antonio and his skilled team deliver unparalleled quality and service. From the first site assessment to the final backfill, every detail is handled with precision, ensuring your project is completed on time, on budget, and to the highest standard. Antonio's team doesn't just solve problems, they prevent them. With a proven track record of working with insurance companies, educating clients, and using the best products available, AquaStop Waterproofing offers a solution you can depend on for years to come. Experience the difference with a team committed to excellence. Antonio and AquaStop Waterproofing are your go-to professionals for all things waterproofing. Get in touch with AquaStop Waterproofing today at 647-631-4144 or visit them at www.aquastopwaterproofing.ca. For direct inquiries, email Antonio at antonio@aquastopwaterproofing.ca. Let's make sure your property stays safe and sound, rain or shine. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
Do you hear that Husqvarna is looking to battery operate all their machinery?
I saw that, I think. Yeah, all their excavators and everything.
They're looking to do everything.
I saw that at the concrete show in Toronto last year, I think.
Was it there already?
I think they have one of their battery operated excavators, which is cool.
I'm against it. I don't think it's a good idea.
Why?
I don't think they're going to be able to do the job that those machines need to be done.
On the consistent basis? You think there's going to be issues with the technology? I think there's going to be issues with technology in the beginning.
But if you got full power and then you got battery power,
yeah,
you're going to not get the same production out of both of them. That's the problem, which is going to affect the production of the business, right?
100%. And I think whoever's going to look at buying those machines needs to weigh those options or at least do side-by-side comparison.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, look at Tesla when they first came out, too. I mean, those cars were kind of shitty to begin with. They still are, but the door gaps. But they've gotten better and better over time. I wouldn't throw it wayside just yet because look at the cost of fuel alone. I mean, even if it does 75% of the job, you're saving on gas. Like, think about how much machinery you have and the cost of that. Then you weigh, okay, 35% reduction in productivity, but I'm also saving 100% of my fuel costs.
But technology-wise, a corded, because all your grinders are corded, right?
Yes.
They're all 240?
Three-phase 208.
So you're drawing a lot of friggin' power.
A lot. Yeah, a lot.
So I just don't see this battery box all of a sudden competing with that.
I don't see that either.
I mean, if you want to get into the hand tools and the smaller toys, then that's fine. Well, even
look at the Bobcats, right? Like, those are slowly going. I saw the same battery operated there. But how can those things go on a consistent basis? But, again, that's out of my wheelhouse. I'd have to see side-by-side
comparison. No, yeah, you'd have to see side-by-side in field.
Not in the lab. Same material, same application to make sure, okay, apples to apples. But I mean, again, I'm no strange. I love innovation. If it changes it for the better and it makes it more cost effective and more productive, by all means, go for it. And
but
try
if it's politically motivated, then it's that's just throw it out
that's
the
a
window.
Of the ball game.
It's gone. Exactly right. So, yeah. Mayor of Toronto wants to change all the lawnmowers and any two stroke to all battery. Outlaw them.
I'm not in agreement with that. I love my gas-powered whippersnapper. It does a hell of a job.
I still prefer my gas power more. I still like it. Just yeah, it doesn't like it. Just makes more sense to me. But that's fine. I get the cost of gas or whatever.
Yeah, but you got to be open to innovation.
Right? Yeah, 100%.
Again, if it changes over time or gets better over time, but the same time and
effort that you're spending on trying to do all this electric stuff.
Yeah.
Why don't you just make the internal combustion two-stroke more efficient?
More efficient. Yeah.
We can. We have the technology.
Yeah.
Yep. Like I'm sure that even Toyota.
Yeah, and Canada's got the resources. We've got a lot of freaking oil here that are untapped.
Yep, which is a shame, but that's a whole other story. That's a whole other ballgame argument, right? So yeah. It's just I agree with you. I'd like to see more creative looking buildings.
Yes.
Like more interesting projects. You know, they keep on tearing down the Gardner.
Yeah.
With no end game in sight.
No.
Other than what they've been hinting at.
The columns haven't even changed the look. Have you noticed that? Every time I drive under, like, I saw forms, I think it was 2 years ago, from the columns underneath. And, you know, you see all those pockets and all the concrete falling off. You see the rebar sticking out. I've seen the same spray-painted circle around a bunch of them, like, looking like, hey, we see it. We're going to fix it. And it stays the same. They have a circle around every. As I drive Toronto like six times a day, and you see it, and you know you're like, okay, the guy marked it. At least it's going to be looked after. And every day
he's got a pickup truck full of cases of spray paint.
Yeah,
in the back. That's all he does.
And that's all they've done. And they haven't done anything.
All they've done is painted those few ones blue for the Maple Leafs.
Right.
That's the exciting news that they've
done. And even those still have the chips falling out. Have you seen it? Yeah. That's Toronto for you.
No, they're going to keep on knocking it down, try to force us to drive on a
six-lane. I would say just build another one right above it.
I would say double-decker.
Yeah, double-decker and...
Build one right now right above it. I've set to go underneath it as a tunnel.
Yeah,
either or. I'd do the tunnel and build one on top.
Yeah.
And then rebuild the one that's original.
Yeah.
Now you got three modes...
To get to downtown core.
And you'll be able to move traffic like never before.
100%.
It'll move better than the 60s.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, they won't do that.
No one's thought about that.
Because they're still trying to figure out when the end date of the LRT on Eglinton is going to be. With no CEO attached because he's resigned.
Crazy? Yeah,
he's resigned. It's the year of the resign.
It is.
2024.
It's crazy. And, you know, yeah.
It's almost like an advent calendar,
right? CP24's got their content for the next couple of months. That's for sure.
It's a construction political advent calendar. It Everyone's is. Just getting resigned.
It really is. But you know what? It needs to happen. It needs change.
But they resign and then they pop up somewhere else in a different job.
Yeah.
That's associated.
And the guy or guy that comes in to replace them, you've never heard of, and they last a month. And it's just, yeah.
Well, why were they replaced with this person? They're not qualified.
Well, whatever they're doing, it's not working. At the end of the day, it's not working. So, you know, it needs a rethink and it needs new people in the position to make those decisions because it's
this country not could be so much better.
100%. It used to be.
We got a lot of hardworking people here. We got a lot of creative people.
We got good people.
They want to build. They want to create. They 100%. Want to. They want to do it on this side of the border.
This country is poised for greatness.
Yeah,
it's sitting idle. I feel right now it's sitting idle and sitting in the back seat. It's waiting for something to change and something a different direction. And I think it'll explode once that happens.
2027.
That's what I'm thinking.
That's what I'm.
Fingers
thinking
crossed.
Too.
Fingers crossed.
We'll see what happens. Right.
Yeah.
But. He'll have a big fight against everything that's going on.
Well, he's going to have a mess to fix.
If it can be fixed.
If it can be, yeah.
Before we become the 51st state. you ready to do 12 questions?
Sure.
We covered everything. Is there anything else you want to cover?
No. I think that's...
I sent you these, right?
Yeah, you did. I got.
Oh, that's right. You sent them
to you too.
You're like You're like doing it all. I was like,
shit. I got to get this to him quick.
No, all good. You can reach him at www.gfiinc.ca, 905-878-3349, Keegan at gfiinc.ca, and then on IG under Ground Floor Industries. What's your favorite construction word or phrase?
That's what I'm trying to pull up here. That's the one I sent you, right?
Yeah.
I think it was, just get her done. I mean, you know, you see hear that a lot on site, and it's just, you know, you'll have guys bitching or bitching about the weather or bitching about this, and just get it fucking done.
Construction.
Just get it done. We got a certain amount of time, get it done in that time.
If you ain't bitching, you ain't constructing. What's your least favorite tool?
I put waterproofing kettle. It used to be.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
We used to call it the smell of money, but it's definitely not the smell of money. And lighting that thing on fire to get it, get the things melted.
I had a question for you. Do you guys just let it Like it just hardens on its own until the next job.
Yep.
And then you
start the next morning.
Till the next morning.
So if you're running that day overnight, it solidifies. So the first guy on site, and you got the two barrels with the big big propane tank, so you gotta let a little propane in. Boom! It's like a cannon shooting off, and then you gotta have it fired up, and it takes about an hour for it to start melting down before you can start running the augers, the agitators.
Do you have to hang out until it completely gets solid again?
No,
you can just leave it. No, in the kettle itself.
What do you mean?
Like, can it travel while it's still? But it's gonna
harden. While it's loose. No.
No, it's gonna harden real quick.
It hardens quick. Yeah.
I got it.
Yeah, okay. It hardens quick.
What's the temperature you got to keep that up to make?
Fuck, I forget now. I think it was.
It's a fucking horror movie, basically.
Yeah. You're melting, you get it on your arms?
You're melting skin, yeah.
Oh, 100%. So that's one of my worst ones because, yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
What do you miss from your childhood?
Playing road hockey in the night with the streetlights on.
It's illegal.
Wow.
You can't play road hockey in Canada anymore.
Rules are made to be broken.
That's a good point. You should be playing road hockey.
Those are the good times.
Right in front of Parliament.
And you're starting to see a little bit more of that, which is exciting, too.
Are we?
Or at least in my neighborhood. I'm seeing a lot more hockey nets out there, kids playing out.
Good.
Yeah, it's good.
It's never bothered me as a driver. I'm not even a big hockey guy. It's never bothered me.
I love it.
You know what? They're natural Canadian speed bumps.
Yeah.
That's what they are.
Yeah, 100%.
We don't need those stupid speed bumps that they put in.
No, put just the kids playing,
hockey, man.
Yeah.
Natural Canadian speed bumps. That's it. Yeah. What construction sound do you love?
Chipping concrete. I mean, to me, that is just the sound of a construction site.
That's sound of money.
That's sound of money, yeah. Or loss of money.
True, go both ways. Depending on the job.
Depending on the job. Or what
What's
it
your
is.
Favorite beverage?
Old fashioned.
That's right, yeah. What turns you on and what turns you off in construction?
I put the characters and relationships you meet and build along the way are a definite plus. I mean, you meet characters in the construction industry from high to low. It's fun to be around those guys. So that's definitely a turn on or a plus in the industry. And lack of an open ear to ways of thinking. So, I mean, construction is evolving. Ways to do things are evolving. The speediness, the composition, products are all changing. Sometimes you get people, I've been doing this for 50 years and you get those. I mean, I'm a relatively young guy, but I've been in the industry for 22 years. And having an open ear, I think, would change a lot. Huge. And relieve a lot of on-site bickering and bantering and fighting.
Problem solve it, man.
Right. And I think anybody can be an expert in the field. It doesn't matter the age. It's just a matter of what they can do and how fast they can do it.
I agree.
So that's the downside.
What's your favorite curse word?
Fuck.
What's your favorite vehicle? Any mode of transportation?
It's got to be a pickup truck.
Any particular of the three?
Well, I just got the Denali Heavy Duty.
Okay.
GMC.
Yep.
I had a Ram before that, 2500, which I loved. I loved the Ram.
Have you had a Ford?
I have not.
Never had a Ford?
No.
I just figure you've had two of the three now.
No, haven't had the Ford. But
which is better, the Ram or the Denali?
Well, Denali's nice. Denali's nice, yeah.
But then you see these really funky Ram, the T-Rexes.
No, I haul Bobcats, so I got to get the 2500s or 3500s.
You need the power.
I need.
It doesn't need to look aggressive. It needs to be aggressive.
It needs to be aggressive. And, carry the load. So, I don't care how fast it goes. As long as it can carry 28,000 pounds, I'm all right.
Plus, there's a target on those ones, man. People are stealing them.
Yeah.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
I always wanted to open a burger spot, actually. Yeah.
Like a kind of little boutique kind of?
A little boutique one, yeah. Burke's Burgers or Burke's Buns. My dad always
called. I know Burke's Bricks. Burke's.
Yeah.
He's a bricklayer.
Well, my dad is a big barbecue. We grew up a big barbecue family. I think I got 6-7 different kind of barbecues.
You're not doing smash burgers, are you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, we'll do them all. Juicy, smash. But I always wanted to open one. But, I mean, that takes a lot of time. You got to be there day in, day out.
Just do a food truck, man.
Yeah, but I own a concrete company.
Put the kettle on the back and then cook the burgers and then do some waterproofing.
There's ways around it. Yeah, but I mean, it's something I've always thought. I love a good burger. But
well, I do too, man.
Yeah.
What profession would you not like to do?
Porta potty cleaning. I mean, you see those guys.
That's the number one that comes up on that
is
question.
It? Is it?
Well, it's the most that's ever been expressed.
They don't look happy.
I've met a few that are okay guys. They're down to earth. They're nice. They realize it's literally a shitty job.
100%.
No pun intended. It's their job.
There's nothing wrong with it. Yeah, it's just not something I would jump at.
I haven't met a tradesperson who says, hey, I want to do that job.
No. Have you seen some of the sport? Porta potties.
There's some scary. I did learn a trick recently. I shared it. He had a little poop catch. So you know how he's like talking about how you toilet paper the whole seat and everything.
Yeah.
No. He put one right in the middle there, and he let it drape down, just hovering the cap.
Okay.
And that's to avoid the blue from splashing
back up on his head.
And I was like, that's fucking pure that's genius. That's genius.
Well, you see the guy's trying to hold the door and air dump it, but they missed the toilet and it's sitting in the front of it. And so it's kind of a double-edged sword.
But that little poop
that's
toilet.
That's not a bad play. That's a smart move, man. That's not a bad play.
I like that one. Last question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
At the current timing, I just lost my English bulldog in July, so I'd like to see her sitting there waiting for me.
What was her name?
Mac. Yeah.
How old?
She was 6. Died of a heart attack. Yeah. Oh. Yeah. So
that's way too young.
Way too young. Yeah. She was a beauty. Don't. Yeah. The current timing. I mean, I haven't had anything.
She snore?
Oh yeah. Oh, snore, fart, snuggle. That is my kind of woman.
I love the snore.
Yeah.
I missed my snore.
She was so good with the kid. I got two young boys.
That's too young, man.
Yeah.
Wow, surprise.
Yeah.
Sorry, man.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Keegan, thanks so much for coming in, man.
Appreciate you having me.
Talking a little bit. It's funny, Steve is one that 6'3". He's the Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
Connected us, right? So it was good. I like what you guys are doing. So
I appreciate it. Appreciate the opportunity, and you guys do a great job on here.
Thanks, bro. Appreciate it, man.
Keep it up.
That's it. We're out of here.